A second reason historians believe that epidemics tore through Native American communities before Europeans arrived is that epidemics also did it after Europeans arrived. In her book Pox Americana, 2001, the Duke University historian Elizabeth Fenn meticulously pieced together evidence that the Western Hemisphere was visited by two smallpox pandemics shortly before and during the Revolutionary War. The smaller of the two apparently began outside Boston in early 1774 and lurked in the area for the next several years, like a sniper, picking off victims at the rate of 10 to 30 a day. In Boston, the Declaration of Independence was overshadowed by the previous day's proclamation of a citywide campaign of inoculation, an early risky form of vaccination in which people deliberately infected themselves with a mild dose of smallpox to produce immunity. Even as it besieged Boston, the virus also spread down the eastern seaboard, laying waste as far as Georgia. It wreaked havoc on the Tsalagi, the group often called the Cherokee, which is a mildly insulting name used by their enemies in the Creek Confederation, and the Haudenosaunee, the indigenous name for the six nations that made up what Europeans called the Iroquois League. Both were important allies of the British, and after the epidemic, neither was able to fight the colonists successfully. Smallpox also ruined the British plan to raise an army of slaves and indentured servants by promising them freedom after the war. The disease killed off most of the Ethiopian regiment, even as it assembled. An equal opportunity killer, smallpox ravaged the rebels too. The virus had been endemic in Europe for centuries, which meant that most Europeans were exposed to it before adulthood. But it was only an occasional terrible visitor in the Americas, which meant that most adult colonists had not acquired childhood immunity. On an individual level, they were almost as vulnerable as Indians. On a group level, though, they were less genetically homogeneous, which conferred some relative advantage. The virus would sweep through them, but not kill quite so many. Still, so many soldiers in the Continental Army fell during the epidemic that revolutionary leaders feared that the disease would bring an end to their revolt. The smallpox, John Adams wrote to his wife Abigail, what shall we do with it? His worries were on target. The virus, not the British, stopped the Continental Army's drive into Quebec in 1776. In retrospect, Fenn told me, one of George Washington's most brilliant moves was to inoculate the army against smallpox during the Valley Forge winter of 78. Without inoculation, she said, the smallpox epidemic could easily have handed the colonies back to the British. Even as the first outbreak faded, Fenn wrote, a second, apparently unrelated epidemic burned through Mexico City. The first cases occurred in August 1779. By year's end, perhaps 18,000 had died in the city area, and the disease was racing through the countryside in every direction. Communications in those days were too poor to permit us to document a transmission chain, but records show smallpox flaring in separate explosions to the south like a chain of firecrackers. Guatemala, 1780-81, Colombia, 1781-83, Ecuador, 1783. Was the virus retracing a journey to Tawantinsuyu it had taken before? It seems likely, decided Calloway, the Dartmouth historian. Fenn tried to trace the virus as it went north. Like Dobbins, she examined parish burial records. In 1780, a telltale surge of mortality traveled north along the heavily traveled road to Santa Fe. From there, smallpox apparently exploded into most of western North America.